tonight to celebrate the launch of Isabel Lohler's latest publication, A Delicate Bond, which is also a gap, beautifully designed by Una Young. We are very grateful for the insight and response in commissioned essays by Sue Rainford, author of Follow Me to the Ground and Heather Davis,
yes,
and Martin Herbert, associate editor of Artful. Sue Rainford, in her essay, Dawn in Verse, writes, "In the throes of your prolonged descent, in an unnamed part of your body, a vial is unturned. Catharsis, revelation, epiphany, suffices to say, a release occurs." The publication celebrates a poignant moment for us at solstice, a joyful return to a togetherness and a greeting of visitors to our gallery spaces after the fog of unknowing of COVID-19. Our exhibition of the same name in 2021 was greeted with visitor exuberance and enthusiasm and the occasional understandable feverish mania. We experienced a giddy release, a heady alchemy of the first journey taken, physical proximity, and the marvel that is Isabel's work, the stunning breadth of human occupation, Lohenmensch, tomes of miracles, the cosmos, and definitive supernova revealed in each adjoining space. The viewer connection to Isabel's work seems a deep-rooted occurrence. Martin Herbert suggests, Nolan spreads out mixed emotions horizontally, and her art can feel like a process of day-to-day coping, because that's the only honest and emphatic way to meet the viewer, both parties on the ground. Equally, Isabel refers to the alchemist that art can offer. Art's slipperiness and beautiful peculiarity grapples with, is somehow made of, the oddness, mystery, and sadness of life. Therein is an art that solicits a meaningful mutuality. The exhibition lingers, an evocation that I draw on in quiet times. This publication, for its many readers, will provide a great proximity to Isabel's practice, but also provides a fragile knowing within our haphazard existence. I remain a believer, very grateful to Isabel for her energy and curiosity in our years of mutuality. This evening has been very kindly presented in partnership with Temple Bar Gallery and Studios. I thank Tina Shaffrey, director, and Orla Sy from Anna for their assistance over the last few weeks. I'd like to thank the Arts Council in supporting your programme, enabling Solstice to commission this exceptional work. I thank our brilliant board. I thank also Meath County Council, whose relationship with us is nationally unprecedented and exemplary in its understanding, belief, and support in our activities. It gives me great pleasure to welcome Isabel in conversation with Frances Halsall, lecturer and co-director of Art and the Contemporary World at National College of Art and Design, and author of Contemporary Art Systems and the Aesthetics of Dispersion, published by Routledge in 2023. Isabel has been the subject of solo exhibitions at Chateau Lacoste, Royal Gallery Derry, Contemporary Art Gallery Vancouver, Mercer Union Toronto, London, Mithraeum, Bloomberg Space London, Douglas Hyde, the Irish Museum of Modern Art, Solstice Art Centre, Kunstverein Graz Austria, Kunstverein Lagenhagen Germany, and Musée d'Art Moderne de Saint-Étienne. She's also represented Ireland at the 2005 Venice Biennale in a group exhibition. Her work is featured in AVA International, Limerick 2018, LIF Biennale Norway, ArtSpace Sydney, Palais de Tokyo Paris, Beijing Art Museum, and Glasgow International. I was going to say Galway International. Glasgow International. Nolan is on the board of Temple Bar Gallery and Studios, where she's a 6-year studio member, and she's represented by Curlin Gallery. And we're suggesting that if anyone has any questions for Isabel, that she actually come up afterwards when we're all having a drink. Thank you very much.
Thanks so much, Belinda. So, as Belinda said, we'll take questions. We're not going to take questions in this part. There'll be questions afterwards. And we'll talk for about 20, 25 minutes. And I've got some questions, themes, and so on that have come out of conversations that we've been having about the work for a while. So maybe that's a place to start. There's a theme of your work that there seems to be, I think you talk about this word spectrum, and like a series of kind of dichotomies, mm-hmm. that might sit on a spectrum, high, low, up, down, sun and foot, the foot touching the ground, contingency order, vertical, horizontal, proximity, distance, light, dark, faith, disbelief, simple, complex, exterior, interior, and a bond, which is also a gap, which is the title of the book. Could you tell us a little bit about that title?
Well, the title was stolen, which a lot of things that I do, there's a lot of theft and tribute are my kind of go-to phrases for, instead of using, because I don't like the word inspiration, so yeah, it's theft and tribute. A delicate bond, which is also a gap, is sort of a mashing together of two sentences from a book that I was reading in 2020 called The Melancholy Assemblage. I just had to remind myself, effect and epistemology in the English Renaissance. So this is not a book that I ever managed to read even half of, never mind finish. But I read the introduction and I was kind of jumping through different chapters because I want to know what melancholy is, and I'm always interested in people writing about melancholy. So the author kind of captured this moment of being at an academic conference, overhearing somebody having a panic attack, and using this kind of moment as a hook for what it is to encounter the emotion of other people. And it felt like something, and to feel that sort of kind of a draw. He didn't really want to go and help the person, which I thought was interesting, but he felt a kind of a compulsion and a draw to sort of, he was witnessing this moment, just, you know, an auditory, overhearing it rather than seeing it. And being confronted, yeah, by these sort of very, very powerful and kind of overwhelming emotions that another human is having proximate to him, and being unable to cope with it and unable to process it. So he talked about, I pulled it up earlier and I can't remember it now. He talks about kind of empathy and aversion. Mm-hmm. And it seems to me that...
Which is another dichotomy.
Which is another kind of, yeah, another kind of duality. So in a way, the simple answer to your question is that I'm thinking about the same thing over and over again, and have been for the last 25, 30 years. But I just am like, I happen upon a new phrase or a new moment, a new text, a new artwork, and it presents for me another opportunity to think about a way of thinking that, hey, welcome, come in and see if you want. Of finding another moment, another way of thinking about, a way of thinking that I think seems to be really, really kind of characteristic, and this is a really simplistic way, but it seems to be very characteristic in, and I know it's a kind of, it's a loose phrase, but in Western thought, of thinking in dualisms. And I never understood it, because I've always thought of life happens in between spaces, and kind of thinking in terms of extremes, while it might be useful, and it's a way to put language on a kind of an experience, it doesn't seem to actually reflect the kind of muddy complexity of the world. So in a sense, I'm always interested in finding ways or instances that sort of, yeah, blur those boundaries and complicate them and upset sort of simplistic ideas that things are black or white.
Mm-hmm. When you're saying, talking about finding ways of, is it finding ways of trying to find meaning in situations that might not make sense? You seem to return to, in this work, but also at other times over the last, I don't know, let me say 5-10 years, you've sort of returned to these figures, and that these figures have all somehow, it seems like you've been drawn to them, because they all seem to be trying to deal with the same thing, of kind of trying to find ways of making the world seem sensible or meaningful, right? Or trying to deal with the contingency or the chaos of the world. So I'm thinking of your engagement with Simone Weil, the kind of mystical philosophical thinker, or St. Cuthbert, someone who is sort of trying to stop the sea, is that right?
He's praying.
He's
Cuthbert
praying.
Knows what he thinks. Yeah,
he's praying in the sea.
Yeah, he prays in the sea up to his neck.
Or Giordano Bruno, who's sort of trying to come up with a sort of a different model of the universe.
Yeah.
Or Tony Soprano.
Yeah.
Kind of, and it seems that, like, it seems to me that rather than these people sort of imposing order on chaos, that you're sort of interested in the way in which they're sort of dealing with the chaos and trying to weave order out of the chaos rather than impose their own order on it.
Yeah, I mean, that's what I like about all of those people, is that they have very powerful commitments to kind of very peculiar worldviews.
Mm-hmm.
and they dedicate their lives, quite literally in certain instances, like dying, you know, for the things that they believe in Bruno's case, and possibly in Vae's case too, that there's something about that commitment to a really kind of esoteric or idiosyncratic worldview. I mean, Cuthbert wouldn't really fall into that category. He's a different, I'm interested in him for different reasons. But there's, I think the thing that I'm more interested in, and I'm attracted to those people because they have this kind of all-encompassing, mystical, extraordinary vision, and they think they have a handle on the nature of the universe and the meaning of it all. And I just can't fathom how anyone can arrive at that position. And they do it with such brilliance, and they're all like extraordinary thinkers. And
are you not doing the same thing?
No, because I think the thing that I find, because you said contingency a few times, and the thing I'm interested more in the fact that it, of all the apparent order that we're confronted with. And I think that's the thing that I find strange, is how much meaning we find in the world and how much we respond to the kind of orders that are offered to us. And I'm looking at something that looks like, say, a quite stable institution that has a certain rationale and a certain reason for being the way it is. And I'm going, yeah, but you were only invented 750 years ago. You're only, you know, and this is all an entirely kind of contingent construct. So there's something I think about working, but wanting to be those people, but never being able to be those people, and using them more as a way of kind of flagging, the strangeness of thinking that the world is in an orderly state.
Right. It's funny, you've used the word strange a few times.
Okay.
And you've used the word human a few times.
Yeah.
Right? And I'm thinking back to your Immer show, right?
Mm.
And in the Immer show, we had a series of rooms that kind of traced a, in the best possible way, a kind of preposterous history. Right?
Yeah.
And it seemed to be a kind of staging of a series of instances of, I think, what we're talking about, which is attempts by humans to kind of weave some kind of order or meaning out of the kind of oddness or weirdness of the world.
Yeah.
Right? So at the beginning, you've got religion, which is sort of one way of understanding the world.
Yeah, well, myth was the first room, but yeah.
Okay, myth, religion, science, and I'm sort of thinking between that, even though you don't really talk about that, but magic, because, you know, magic is sort of operating in that kind of space between religion and science and art.
Yeah.
So you've got religion, science, myth, and then art at the end.
Yeah.
So here's my question. It's almost as if you're a kind of an alien anthropologist observing us humans. Okay, look at what those weird humans are doing. They think about religion, they think about science, and ha ha ha, look at them, they think they're going to find order in this kind of crazy world. But that, so there's two things about that. Are you an alien anthropologist? But secondly, it seemed that art was featuring in that exhibition. It's like you were making stuff that looked like art and was about art.
Yeah.
In an art gallery.
I know. I understand what you're saying, but I don't actually know how to respond to it. I mean, clearly I'm not an alien anthropologist, and if I was, I wouldn't blow my cover here. I don't know. It's another kind of easy dualism to fall into. I think the thing that I'm fundamentally interested in a show like that is the only way I can think about vastness, and whether that's time or space or a very abstract concept that's a lot larger than the scope of my brain cells, is through kind of quite like small material or intimate moments. And I think, I mean, the thing with the exhibition is that, I was thinking particularly about light and our ideas about light and the kind of rhetoric and metaphors that operate and abound and have done for thousands and thousands of years in human culture, and trying to think about the different ways. So it's easy to kind of put labels on there. I think that there's a sort of scientific set, a way of thinking about light. There's and a set of metaphors that arise particularly in the Enlightenment. And there's a kind of religious attitudes to light and what it means, and these kind of valences of like badness and goodness and light and dark, which I think are really problematic. So I wanted to kind of unpick those in a kind of material way. But art is also a way in which, to go back to, sorry, the beginning of your question, is a way in which we understand the world. So, I mean, I can't leave art outside of, you know, the, like if I'm scrutinizing the way in which these metaphors operate. So there was one work that kind of evolved through the exhibition, and I never knew what that work was. And sometimes I thought it was an artwork, which sounds like an odd thing to say.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I thought it was like an analog for consciousness, and it was a kind of abstract form that went on a journey on these sort of stone plinths. Now, I'm probably the only person, maybe apart from Sarah Glennie, who I think is here in the room, who I was trying to explain how this artwork was evolving through hundreds and thousands of billions of years of time, and it was somehow an analogue of the visitor to the exhibition,
yeah,
and an analogue of what an artwork is at the same time. And that's, yeah, I don't know. Sorry,
no, so
that doesn't make a lot of sense.
No, it makes a lot of sense to me. I did.
This is why I asked Francis to talk.
it's so interesting to me. Your work sort of looks at metaphor, or sort of interested in those, as again, as another way in which some sort of understanding or order or kind of is sort of brought to the world. And yet I don't think, maybe you push back against this, I don't think you sort of employ metaphors themselves in your work.
No.
Your work is
no,
not.
I don't like metaphors,
no.
Because
okay.
I don't like going to exhibitions when I'm being told what to think or what to feel.
Okay. So I'm resisting the temptation now to just explain your work to you.
Yeah, that's good.
I don't know where to go. Well, there's so many different places I want to go to. That's really interesting what you're saying about this in that show. Let's not focus too much on the image show about how there was a sort of, there was an actor. I don't know if that's the right word, but went through these different instances, right? Is
yeah.
that what you're saying? Sorry.
No, it's just going to say, like, the hard thing to talk about, because like, you sort of have a sense, and I think scientists probably don't have as much of a sense as those of us who are outside of science has a kind of purpose. And we think we know what it's doing or what it's for. And likewise, we sort of have a sense of what religion might be for. But it's very hard to have, you know, it's impossible when you're within the art world at this moment in time to have a kind of sense of what art is for.
Isn't that precisely what's interesting about it?
I think it is precisely what's interesting in it. But it's also, oh, I don't know what the end of that was now. Sorry. It's also, it's something about, like, you know, when you're looking at science, you know what you're looking at. But when you're looking at art, the point is that you don't want to know what you're looking at, of certain kinds of artwork. I mean, not all.
Is that another dichotomy then, a kind of interior, exterior, or explicability, inexplicability?
I think it's it's more of, I guess, it's a kind of philosophical space or something, if you want to be a little grander about it. It's for thinking about how we don't know how to think about things.
Yeah.
It's for making, for me, it's for making order inconvenient. It's
yes.
for making the world available in a way that's troubling or inconvenient or peculiar or beautiful.
Yeah.
It doesn't always have to be kind of difficult, but it's not a space like a scientific worldview or a scientific kind of effort to maybe to explain something, to discover something.
Mm-hmm.
If anything, it's the space for upending and
yes.
confusing, because, you know, and that's where I get like, because it is confusing.
Yeah.
And for all of the kind of amazing work that people do in various fields to explain aspects of reality or to make living in the world bearable and wonderful, there still needs to be a space to not understand. And that
yeah.
was what the final room in that image show was.
Sure.
It was the space to not understand.
But
that was for me. And that's a bit like, so I sort of made it the death room. But for me, that was involved putting a big, huge photograph of donkeys in a graveyard, in,
yes.
and I can't explain that.
But
you know.
That's really nice, sort of moving on to a related theme. If we're talking, perhaps a little flippantly, but about, you make stuff that's playing the role of art, right?
Sometimes, yeah.
Sometimes. And I'm not saying that to denigrate what you do, obviously, but it seems there are also these figures in your work, right?
Mm.
That may be all doing the same thing. And you say you've got animals, and you've looked at animals a lot. You've looked at humans, but humans who are sleeping or humans who are doing something. And then you've got the artworks.
Yeah.
And then I'm wondering, are these all analogues for the same thing?
Yeah.
Right? Because they're all, on the one hand, they all have agency. They have some sort of intentionality. And yet that agency is always somewhat, in your worldview, like, you know, it's always somewhat inscrutable.
Yeah.
It's an agency we can never quite grasp. We
no,
can never
that's
quite fathom.
Yeah.
And so they're kind of analogues for each other, that the animal and the artwork and the human are all somehow displaying an exteriority, being in the world,
yeah,
and yet they're holding something back.
Yeah. Yes.
No, okay. Well, I'm glad let's take that off there. Say
yeah,
a little bit
no,
more
I mean
about
that,
animals. Like,
yeah, I mean, it is. It's about, like, so I did an exhibition, I don't remember what year now, maybe 2009, in the Curlin Gallery, and there was an awful lot of it was when it was, wasn't long after I'd started making sculpture work, and I remember talking about the sculpture work in terms of, and it's like it's a bit dopey, but it was a kind of useful way of thinking about them, that I wanted them to be very kind of beautiful, I wanted them to be kind of slippery also, and that you kind of not immediately available to be kind of read or understood as a certain kind of thing. But to have that kind of sense of an agency, but also, yes, a sense of inscrutability. And it seemed like the thing that the exhibition at a certain point needed was some kind of an animal presence. So I remember I'd been working on these sculptures. Oh, the dopey way I described them is that I wanted them to be, have these kind of like almost bedroom eyes, and they'd be, come here, come here, come here. But at a certain moment of approach, they're like, fuck you. Mm-hmm. And it's just like that they kind of resist your desire to understand them.
Yeah.
And that, I, so for me, that resistance is important, because I guess it is an analogue of, you know, and it comes back to the essay, the kind of essay that's in the book. It comes back to this difficulty of distance and intimacy.
Yes.
And between the desire to know and that kind of, and then the risk, that mutuality that entails.
But if,
and the kind of desire to protect the self as well as the desire to kind of connect with the other. So for me, I mean, animals are just fascinating. So I put an animal in the show because I wanted something to look at you.
Yeah.
And to have a different kind of sense of another, like, it's like, and again, yeah, that's like, that was definitely like an artwork.
Yeah.
Like, you know, it's like, I need to make a sad swan and put it in the exhibition so people think about sad swans.
But
looking at the work.
If someone didn't know your work and was listening, came into this cold,
yeah,
right? What they might miss is the extreme generosity in your work, right? Because it might be that it's kind of, we're describing it as being kind of abstract and obscure and kind of didactic and sort of telling people about ideas, telling people what to think, constantly withdrawing about kind of resisting meaning, but it's not. There's a sort of a generosity in that insofar as it's sort of, it's also making a connection with an audience. It's moving from a kind of particularity in the work to a kind of a generosity.
Yeah, well, I've never, I mean, like, it's a funny thing to say that if you're, I have heard that people think my work is beautiful on occasion,
yeah,
and certain kind of pieces have, and I'm interested in that, and I'm interested in work that has a very sort of strong kind of aesthetic richness, and but maybe a kind of singularity and oddness, and something that you want to spend time with. And I think there's a awful lot of artwork that's quite interesting, and I don't necessarily want to spend much time with it.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like, oh God, yeah, and it feels like, I feel like, yeah, I want the work to give something, and I want it to be generous. And it's something, I think people have heard me mention Willie McKeown 100 times, but it was like, Willie always sort of just couched beauty in terms of generosity.
Yeah.
And I think, like, I value that, and I value it also, and this kind of goes back to the world is strange and weird, and it's kind of difficult, and I think there's something very interesting about wanting to go to art galleries and go to museums, and it's a paradox that sort of like animates me, because I feel sort of guilty about that desire to want to go and look at beautiful things in the museum,
mm-hmm,
because it feels like you're ignoring what's going on in the world.
Yeah.
But equally, I don't want to be in a world where those spaces aren't there. And there are also spaces where I think you kind of get to, and this is, I think, goes back to the idea of beauty maybe, or generosity, where you get to exercise your empathy in this sort of like safe space,
yeah,
and have these kind of, like, I never, well, I love people tonight because so many of you came here, thank you very much, but I often don't like people very much, but I get to go to museums and I feel like I love humans when I see, you know, a small object made by somebody maybe even 30, 40,000 years ago. And you feel that connection, and you go, oh yeah, there is something. Because I often think the idea of humanity is just an invention. And then I go somewhere.
That's the alien anthropology.
And then you go somewhere and you go, oh no, I feel something. I feel something.
You write a thing in here, I think it's in here, where you say that art solicits a meaningful mutuality.
Yeah.
Or at the very least rehearses that meaningful mutuality.
Yeah, yeah.
But then there's something, I think you might have said this rather than written it down, which is that these are all different ways of saying that art is about love.
Yeah. 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 Like, it's really corny. It took me a long time to like say it. But I think it is about love, because of course it's about lots of other things, and there's lots of ways of doing art. But I just don't know why you would do it if you weren't, like, I don't know why someone would try to be an artist to get rich or be famous. Maybe if you wanted to enjoy the lifestyle of certain kinds of artists. But if I wasn't, why, I don't know why you're laughing.
No, smiling is important.
Yeah, I think love is important. Because it reconciles you to existence. And I think that's really fundamental. I find that in science too. I listen to a thing about like entropy and I feel like I understand it for 5 minutes and I'm glowing, you know, and then I don't understand it any longer. But it's,
if we could go back to that previous theme, they're all just potentially different instances or iterations of the same kind of impulse. I think I'm quoting you now when you said different testing and trying to find different ways of learning to love the world.
Yeah. I mean, because there's so many reasons to not.
Yeah.
And I don't... Yeah, I mean, other people have other ways that they find, like standing on mountains and things like that, but that's not something that just fills me with fear.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's something about, like, culture that I find a certain kind of solace in, which, yeah, that's, like, not a revelation, but it's not something maybe that people talk about so much.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's quite simple, except that it isn't, and then it slips away.
Yeah. We're sort of nearly at time.
Yeah.
And there's this big topic I want to talk about because I think it's super, super interesting.
Okay.
I think it's really interesting in terms of how you work.
Oh, okay.
I think it's really interesting in terms of, like, your ideas around the world.
Yeah.
And this is what you've... is it a condition? You have aphantasia, right?
Yeah.
So you have no mind's eye.
Yeah.
Which I don't understand.
No.
And you said something the other day, which is that actually art becomes kind of important to you because when I close my eyes, potentially the world isn't there.
Yeah.
This is a big topic, isn't it? In other words, you suggested that you kind of need art to constantly verify that the world is real, constantly kind of test it.
Yeah, and I've been saying that for years.
Yeah.
That I need to, it's partly because I have a terrible memory anyway.
Yeah.
And I don't know that a terrible memory is connected particularly. Aphantasia, for anyone who doesn't know, affects about 2% of the population. It literally means you have no mental imagery. So when you close your eyes, it's just blackness. And like lots of people have very fuzzy minds.
Yeah, I've got very fuzzy minds.
And some people have incredibly acute
ones.
And I found out a few years ago. Yeah, you think it's more interesting than I do. But I
can tell you why.
I do think it matters. I mean, the thing that's most interesting to me is that it's one of those moments where you find something out about the world that you didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And you go, oh my God, everybody's mind works differently.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's evidence for this all the time. And we're much more au fait with this idea now than we were even 10, 15 years ago. It's a commonplace. But there's, in the last book I made, like, there's so many instances looking back over of texts that I wrote before I knew this. And it's about clinging onto memories. It's about using work as a way of kind of anchoring the world, about making reality kind of giving a material form to certain kind of abstract ideas in order to be able to remember them, in order to kind of make a kind of record of ideas.
To end on a kind of a more abstract, but I think this might be key to this, which is that, okay, where to start? Really interested in the way you work, right?
Mm.
Just having been with you in lockdown and seeing you work away.
Yeah.
That actually you always start with something external because you don't have the kind of the internal imagery.
Yeah.
A lot of other artists might imagine stuff and then do that.
Yeah.
But you're always starting with the external.
Yeah.
Not with the internal. And I think that might be one of the really most interesting kind of points of these dichotomies, the internal and the external.
Yeah.
The work is about the kind of exteriority and a kind of struggle to make the interior exterior, but then also to kind of work from the exterior. And I'm really interested by the way you begin work by copying something.
Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, but then by the end it's sort of gone.
Yeah.
But that sort of worked
but
its way into...
But that's the same with research.
Yeah, exactly. It's the same
like
with research, the same with writing.
There's
same
a reference
with,
point
a reference
that
point.
I begin with.
And maybe
and
lots of people do start like that, but lots of other people don't start like that.
Yeah.
It's much more about kind of self-generation.
I think that the thing that I think makes it interesting for me as an artist, and I definitely know some other artists do this, is I never know... I don't really have a sense of how something's going to turn out. and this is what something I've been saying again for years, is that like I have to make something in order to know what it's going to do.
Yeah.
And I think the thing that it's that I didn't realise, I think, until I thought about it in recent years, is that there's an awful lot of, you know, for all of the kind of references and the slightly pointy-headed books and things that I might use to kind of stimulate a working process, there's a huge amount of improvisation in the kind of production and fabrication. And that's what's really interesting and important to me as the maker of a thing, because I don't want to know where the thing is going. I want to arrive at a thing that I find will have hopefully that kind of tension. And for all my kind of irritation with, you know, Western culture and history, of, you know, being kind of creating these sort of false binaries in order to make the world explicable, like, I know I'm completely driven by that desire to find a kind of tension and to find that space of something that is both available and inscrutable. And yeah, and yeah, that's a bad way to end, but yes,
that's a great way to end. We're at time. That was on point. Thanks so much. Thank you.
Thanks, Gavin. Thanks all for coming, and I just want to say thank you so much to Belinda Quirk and Solstice Art Centre. Thanks, Frances Holtzell, but you don't get to make books very often, and and it was an amazing opportunity. So thank you. And thank you, Una Young, who designed the book very beautifully. I hope you had a great